quite interesting also for our authority to see how we would build up PPL with shorter flights, two different aircraft, how we're going to do the migration between the two aircraft, and in the end fly the 45 hours with all the solo hours in it. So it was more like a puzzle, and talking to the authorities, and also for the exam, for example, because it was not really clear for us if we could also do an exam on an electric aircraft or if that was not possible. And then the next problem, we need examiners that actually have the conversion to the PPL, you know, because that's also has to be done. So it was just a lot of steps and a lot of puzzles and a lot of discussions and talks with our authorities to get it going. So a lot of flight schools ask for the syllabus, but we rather don't send it because, well, spent quite a lot of time on
For
it.
sure. Yep. It's part of your intellectual property at
Yeah,
this
it's
point.
it looks like all the exercises are the same as any other PPL, but of course the flights and the arrangement within the syllabus is a bit different.
Having graduated from TU Delft with a master's degree in industrial design engineering, Matthias Collard went on to found not one, but two different businesses in digital product design and front-end development, respectively. After 24 years in digital product design and entrepreneurship, he switched to aviation and co-founded the eFlight Academy in the Netherlands in 2021. eFlight Academy trains pilots, an admirable goal. They do it sustainably too, conducting 90% of training flights in electric aircraft, flying emissions-free with electricity generated by their own solar microgrid. Now, would you believe that they hold not one, but two records in electric aviation? eFlight Academy is currently the largest operator of piloted electric aircraft in the world. And going by our data, they are the operator of the electric aircraft with the most flight time, a Pipistrel Velis Electro with tail registration FHGBC. Matthias is also our guest today on the SkyZero podcast. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
I'm glad. So, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit. I mean, we just heard your bio, but
Yes.
tell it a little bit in your own words and why the switch to aviation, maybe. That sort of doesn't come out in what I just read.
No, yeah. So it was quite a big switch because it's a totally new industry for me. So I was in the mostly in the digital design space, user experience. That was my subject. And I was running a fairly good running company, design agency. But I was also interested in electric propulsion. And like 2013, I had my first electric car, and I really liked experiencing this new type of technology in a really conventional sector explode more or less, you know, from really a car that everybody said that's not going to be anything, and then 10 years later it's really big, and I can drive everywhere, and there's charging all over Europe, and it kind of works. And I was always following all the companies there, and I really was a bit jealous on people in that industry that just experienced a boom of technology, and especially, well, one that is I think good for the environment, less emissions. But I also wanted to do something like that. But then I was thinking maybe not in automotive, because that's a bit late if I step into automotive in 2020. So what's another sector that still has to be electrified and is maybe a little bit challenging, so I could pick up a nice task, pick up the glove to start working on that. And then it became aviation. Because in my efforts to be to lower my own footprint, I think not flying was the most difficult one. Because eating less meat, or well, driving electric, or having solar panels on your roof, it has a lot of positive effects. But not traveling, I cannot imagine any positive effect on that. So also for myself and for my kids and future generation, I just want to still be able to travel, but hopefully on a more sustainable way. So that's why I started looking for the sector where to start something, and I had quite a lot of different ideas until I met my co-founder who was in flight training already, and he convinced me that flight training would be the easiest way to start with getting experience into electric aviation, because that's what I was lacking, experience in aviation. So I now got to do both, just running a company in this sector, and learning a lot at the same time. So
Yeah.
that's how I got into
So
it. Yeah.
were you a pilot before or had any interest in aviation?
Not really, just as a passenger, traveling the world.
Yeah.
That was one of my hobbies until not too long ago. Yeah, I got my license in my school, so I was actually a test pilot, or how you say it. Yeah, I was.
Student pilot, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I was testing out the syllabus and the
Oh,
program and the
yeah.
school because I was the first client as well,
Got it.
right? So yeah, among a few others, but
User
that
acceptance
was really good. Yeah, something
for
like that.
sure.
Yeah, felt like that. Yeah,
Yeah.
and of course, during that period, I made a lot of improvements on the company and how everything worked and the processes and the customer journey and everything. So yeah,
Cool.
that was quite good. And
Nice.
yeah, and now I am a pilot. I have my PPL, and I'm currently studying for my instrument rating. So I like it, of course. It's a nice hobby,
Yeah.
but it's also well, professionally important to have that in this sector.
No doubt. No doubt. So in 2013, you probably didn't have too many choices, like Nissan Leaf or Mitsubishi
Yeah, I
IMEV
had the first Model S, so
or.
I
Got
was
it. Yeah.
just there. Yeah.
Yeah. So many parallels. Like I remember in a very similar way, the Roadster I'd heard about and I didn't really care. But when the Model S came out, I'm like, wait a minute, that looks like a car my neighbors might drive. And you're telling
Yeah.
me it's all electric. And there was this part of me that as a kid was really interested in anything that moved, whether it cars or airplanes or anything else. But then growing up sort of realized like, oh, okay, they're all burning stuff. So, I kind of became a public transit nerd, on some level,
Yeah.
which I still enjoy, but I'd missed the machinery, and yeah. And so when the Model S came out, I started to think like, wait, how can I help? It's too bad I didn't study automotive design or batteries or
Oh,
something. It's too bad I'm only a software person. So I really admire and yeah, I feel that there's almost a lot of parallels between your
yeah,
path and
sounds
mine
like it.
here. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. But so as we go in through eFlight though, and yeah, I think you're right that, I mean, this is one of the few businesses you can do with electric aviation, right? It's one of the few things you can at the moment. Endurance is still kind of limited, so we've talked a little bit about the genesis there. Cool. So if I understand it right, the eFlight Academy fleet includes, is it five Pipistrel Valis Electros and also a
Yes.
Bristel, not the Bristel Energique, not the electric one,
No.
but the gas
Yeah.
burning one. So yeah, how long have you guys been doing this and what have you learned about, operating a fleet of electric aircraft?
We started with two aircraft in the beginning in 2021. We didn't want to start with one aircraft because, well, especially because it's a new model, there's a big chance that something, well, it's grounded and you cannot, well, perform your business. So we started with two. We bought them. I actually paid them from my well, from the profits of my design agency, and later on, I found a bank to finance the aircraft. And we started in the middle of the COVID pandemic, and we found a hangar that was actually being used for events, and all those events were gone. So we could get a really nice place and a really nice hangar. Where we could start, there was nothing else. It was completely empty. There were a few airplanes, but it was really big. So it was a really nice place to start. And Teuge is a great airfield because it's uncontrolled, still quiet, a lot of green areas around it. So that was a good place. And I think the good thing is that me and my co-founder just totally focused on electric flying. And during the time, there were a few other flight schools looking at it, but existing flight schools, they have a lot of issues adding electric to the fleet. So our focus was for about half a year on how to get this company running, how to write a PPL syllabus for an electric aircraft, where do we get the insurance for this airplane? Because there were hardly any insurance who understood this technology and wanted to insure the aircraft. We had to talk to the authorities. We could do, of course, our branding completely into this electric flying thing, which is also difficult for competitors as they have been flying for 30 years with combustion engines. So I think that it took us a lot of time, but because we had to full focus on these two types of aircraft, it was easier for us to implement them and to make it work than other flight schools.
How different did the syllabus need to be? I mean, obviously, you know, I've looked at the manual for the Velis versus the Velis Electro, and it's like, you know, there's an extra chapter or something, right? So they're not super different. But I've never developed a syllabus for training pilots. Like, how different was it in the end?
All exercises we are flying under EASA, so all the EASA exercises for PBL we have to fly, of course.
Right.
But then we have to decide what exercise are we going to fly with what aircraft.
Right.
And especially in the navigation part, there are a few three-leg long navigation flights that we cannot do with the Velis. So we need another aircraft for that. And we had the Pipistrel Virus, which is actually a predecessor of it's the same airframe, but just with a Rotax engine. And of course, it was quite interesting also for our authority to see how we would build up PPL with shorter flights, two different aircraft, how we're going to do the migration between the two aircraft, and in the end fly the 45 hours with all the solo hours in it. So it was more like a puzzle.
Right.
And talking to the authorities, and also for the exam, for example, because it was not really clear for us if we could also do an exam on an electric aircraft or if that was not possible. And then the next problem, we need examiners that actually have the conversion to the Pipistrel, you know, because that's also has to be done. So it was just a lot of steps and a lot of puzzles and a lot of discussions and talks with our authorities to get it going. So it's maybe not as straightforward as something else, but it was not like we had huge issues with certification or something.
Okay.
But it is different. A lot of flight schools ask for the syllabus, but we rather don't send it because, well, spent quite a lot of time on it.
For sure. It's part of your intellectual property at this point.
It looks like, all the exercises are the same as any other PPL. But of course, the flights and the arrangement within the syllabus is a bit different.
Got it. So you mentioned I think of it as the cross-country part where you sort of have to go from multiple airports and so on. And if I remember right, and I'm probably more thinking about the Canadian or even FAA regs, but I think there's a certain number of miles you have to travel or perhaps...
Yeah, 150.
Perhaps, So is that going to be possible? I know a lot of flight schools who are looking at this, and even, you know, Pipistrel's advertising themselves says buy the Velis Club, and that's how, you know, the gas aircraft, and that's how you can finish your certification testing. With the advent of charging, which especially where you are, like Energy to Fly is building out chargers, and you know, of course, flight schools can own chargers and can install them in nearby airports. Will that be possible? I mean, given the current endurance limitations, or is there something about the regs that just means like no, it won't be
no,
possible
it's,
at all?
No, it's definitely the batteries at the moment. Yeah, the charging is not really a problem. We can drive chargers to every place we want. And we did that. So all our airports in our neighborhood have a mobile charger that we can use.
Right.
It's the battery. It has an hour of capacity. And if you fly AB flights, so from one airport to the other, there's a 30-minute reserve that you have to keep track of. So you can only fly 30 minutes.
Right.
80 knots cruise. So that's, you can calculate it. That's 40 nautical miles.
Got it.
So you're never going to make 150.
Got it. You need a leg, which is 100. Okay, got it. So there's a literal challenge there then. And okay, got it. Thank you. How have they been holding up? I mean, maintenance and those kinds of things. You know, in electric car land, you know, we often talk about, oh, maintenance is much simpler. There's no oil changes, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just tires and windshield wipers, which is maybe a little bit hyperbole, but not exactly. That's pretty true to my experience. And we assume, I think, that in aviation is going to be similar, no engine overhauls and so on. But what have you found? I mean, another thing that aviation manufacturers might do is say, like, all right, we're not going to worry about battery cycle counts being as high. We're going to sort of charge them more, and you're going to have to replace the batteries every so often. What have you found in terms of maintenance with the electric aviation so far?
So, of course, we have 100 hours, 2 hour, 100 hours inspections. And I don't think that is less time or work than a regular aircraft, because if we see what's being done and hours being spent, it's not so much different. The batteries is the biggest maintenance thing. Not that you need to look at it all the time, but you have to replace them quite often. So we are already for most aircrafts on the third set
Wow.
right now. Yeah, and that's not what was expected. That's also not what the manufacturer has told us. But we got good guarantees on everything, so
Okay.
it's all right. But that definitely there's something wrong still in the software or in we are thinking experimenting ourselves. What is the problem? Is it the full power every time when you do a takeoff? So currently we have a project that we have one aircraft we do 45 kilowatts and one full power 65 kilowatts.
Wow.
So we have one aircraft that never has full power
Wow.
necessary, only an emergency situation, and we're going to see if that changes the battery.
Wow.
Another problem I think with the batteries is that you always have to charge it to 100%, otherwise your flight is just too
Yeah.
short,
Yeah.
and that's normally not a good thing for batteries.
Right.
So you ought to have to 20 to 80. It never comes under 20 because we stop at 30%,
Right.
but that might also be something. And then there's a lot of specific software things that measure the healthiness, the state of health of the different battery cells, and there should be some improvements over there. So when we send back a battery, I'm sure it's still very good, but some cells are not good, and then the
Right.
old battery says I'm not gonna perform as I promised I would.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that the battery is for us it's financially not really a big issue at the moment because well we have good contact with the manufacturer, but that's definitely something we thought would be better and also would
Yeah.
improve more. Another thing that we noticed in the beginning, but now I think it's kind of straightened out. We had to train all the maintenance personnel for this aircraft, so they all had to go to Italy for a week and quite expensive with hotel and everything. And it, of course, it's being charged to the client, which is us and a startup with two aircraft, you know. So that was quite a fee. And what we have, and I don't think a lot of other companies have that, is that we are the fleet leader. So our aircraft, I think all of them have most of the hours of any Pipistrel, Velis, Electro in the world. And that means EASA, but also the manufacturer, they really like to see what's going on in our aircraft.
Right.
So we need to do some more checks and maybe some replacements here and there. But here again, we get a lot of good agreements on this.
Right.
But the aircraft might be a little bit longer on the ground now and then.
Yeah. Well, right. So to your point, the warranty is sort of covering the cost of that battery pack.
Yeah. But that's only if because we're the first. Of course, that's not going to
Yeah.
be
For
for everybody.
everybody.
But
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's still downtime, right? And then still the
yeah,
labor
definitely.
cost of doing so and so on. Yeah. So it's not without cost. Yeah.
But for the rest, like the thing we have to change the most are the tires.
Yeah.
That's because we have
Oh.
asphalt runway. If we would have grass, then it wouldn't be so much of a problem. But we have asphalt.
Right.
And for the rest, we are really happy with the performance. If you don't look at the batteries, we hardly have any issues flying or charging. Or of course, there's always something. But our maintenance organization is really fast in fixing it. In the beginning, we had a few things we didn't understand, and we had a few weeks of outage of one aircraft. But now we know them so well. We know what's going on. We know how to fix it. So now we're quite happy with how they hold up after so
Cool.
many hours.
What caused that issue that you're referring to?
It was some circuit breaker, or that was not on the main panel. It was somewhere hidden in the engine, and nobody knew it existed. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah, and it
Got
was
it.
like a 5 minute repair, but it took 3 weeks to figure
To
it
figure
out.
out, yeah. It takes 3 weeks to find the button and very little time to push it. Yeah. Yeah. So I mentioned that you've got a Bristel, from what I can see too, the B23. Are you interested in the B23E, the Energique version?
Yeah, definitely. That's why we actually not ours. We have two of our first students got their PPL, and they're really into electric aviation as well. But they wanted to fly and learn to be a good pilot as well, also outside of the electric limited range. So they decided to buy a B23 because they couldn't buy the other one.
Yeah.
But they probably will swap it if the other one comes out.
Right,
But we
right.
really needed an IFR aircraft for also our new training. So it's their aircraft, and we use it, and we rent it out as well. And yeah, it's really nice to have those really enthusiastic students. We call them, they're grown men, of course, but we call them students. And they come, yeah, it's really nice that they help us out and we help them out. And
Got
it's
it.
really cool that we have quite a community already
Cool.
in our airfield. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I really like what H55 is doing with that. I think it's going to be a really great aircraft. If I remember right, the certification is done with EASA, and I can't remember if they're close with FAA or beyond it. So it should just be a matter of getting it to market now. I mean, is that what you're hearing?
Indeed. That, yeah, and yeah, I haven't looked in it very much, but I think it's a really good candidate for us for longer flights and well, especially IFR capability.
Yeah,
I'm not
yep.
sure if the first electric version will be IFR, but that's probably more like a trainer for basic training.
Right.
But yeah, we definitely look at a lot of different manufacturers at the moment. Finally, after we thought in 2020 that in 2023, 2024, there would be a lot of aircraft to the market.
Right.
But well,
Right.
we're almost in 2026, and now we hopefully start seeing some new players.
When you say
That
that
would be really
Diamond
nice.
comes to mind, they talked about what was it, the DAE-36 or something. I've forgotten the model
Yeah,
number. Are there others that I'm not thinking
DA-340.
of?
Yeah, not that are that far in their development at the moment. Yeah, we were with F2 flight design, the flight design F2, which we're making the F2E. It's a German company, but they were building it in the Ukraine, so they had a huge problem,
Oh,
and
yeah.
they went bankrupt. And that was a pity because that was also a really nice setup. Yeah. So, and that happens, of course. Yeah, there are quite a few companies that have been gone bankrupt last year.
Lots of
Not
change.
easy.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. I wondered if Pipistrel saw you guys as a leader like we do on the website. So yeah, that's cool to hear about that relationship. So they've been really supportive, I imagine. That's helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so another thing I wanted to talk to you about was the solar end of what you guys are doing. Every now and again, I get to thinking about how much open land airports normally have, and of course, it wouldn't be safe to paper all of that with solar panels. But this is just sort of naive daydreaming on my part. You've done it. You've put a solar set of a solar array on or near an airport. I mean, what can you say about that? I mean, has that been a good fit? Obviously, the emissions for the electricity, right? And the low cost electricity, I'm sure have been good, but they'll tell me what you're thinking there too. But what's it been like operating a solar farm that close to an airport? Has that been like a natural fit, or have there been challenges? Like, what's the experience?
Yeah, there was actually only the roof construction because we have it on the roof. I think that was the only thing that we doubted if that would be okay. The biggest problem was the financing, of course, because it's not really cheap to purchase 500 panels and also a 500 kilowatt hour battery because we store our solar in our own battery, which is on airside next to the hangar. Because our biggest problem was that our grid could not handle more than 3 times 80 amps. So with that, you can only charge 2.5 aircraft at max power. And we had already 4 aircraft. So we couldn't, we really had to think about our planning because we couldn't charge all aircraft at the same time. And it would cost at least 2 years to have a larger grid connection and would also cost a lot of subscription for that.
Right.
And then we said, hey, we have to build our own grid and we have to have our own power because that was also always a dream for me as well as, yeah, if we're going to fly electric, we have to have our own solar power because you don't want to have some coal burning to fuel your aircraft. So you want to have your own solar energy and also be able to prove that with dashboards and whatever. So we applied for a subsidy for making our hangar a space where electric aviation can be developed. And we said we need to we bought that hangar, by the way, that event hangar that I told you in the beginning. So we could actually do the renovation and we could invest in the battery, in the charging stations, and in the solar panels. And we got quite a big subsidy from the European Union to do that, to make a center for accelerating electric aviation. So the Energy to Fly company that you're was saying about charging infrastructure, they're also in our hangar and they work together next to the flight
Cool.
school. So, and there are a few others as well. So it's really nice that if you walk into our fly school, you meet a lot of other people who are working in this sector and doing all kind of different stuff.
Amazing.
And we still host a lot of events, specifically on sustainable aviation, where we have ministers walking in and policymakers and journalists and whatever. Everybody comes to our place to check it out and
Awesome.
to feel
Awesome.
the
Yep.
energy.
I looked into for a little while the idea of and I'm, oh gosh, I hope I get the words right, but sort of aviation carbon credits. And if I remember right, there is a regulatory market. And I think like EU was looking at doing something, but then ICAO stepped in and said, no, we're doing something different. But I wondered, like, would a large operator like you guys, is there something there that I'm missing in terms of being able to offer carbon credits, in terms of like, yeah, I mean, the gas burning aircraft are going to have to pay for their carbon emissions. Could you not sell offsets against that? Similar to the way Tesla sells sort of carbon offsets to the other automakers. Is there regulatory support for that, or what's have you looked into it at all?
Yeah, well, of course, we looked into a lot of these kind, but I don't think that is called carbon credits here in Europe that we can use. I have to check it. But what we do have is that there is a subsidy for it's mainly like trucks. If you have an electric truck and you have your own solar energy and you charge your own trucks with your own solar energy, you get also some kind of units, they call it. And we applied for that also from an aviation perspective.
Okay.
And it was not in the law, of course, because, well, nobody thought about electric
Yeah, for sure.
airplanes.
Yep.
But they said, okay, it's also transport, and you do actually the same thing, so you can also get those. So for all these things, it's finding out what the law is and how it's being set up, and if you're also going to be part of that. Also for buying the electric aircraft, there's a lot of subsidies if you buy electric tractors or electric cars or buses or things like that. So it also is true now for electric
Electric
helicopters and
aircraft,
electric
okay.
airplanes and everything. So yeah, we can also get those
Cool.
subsidies.
Canada, where I live, recently started doing a thing where drivers of electric cars can essentially be paid to charge their cars somehow. And I wonder if it's similar to this unit thing you're talking about. A couple of Canadian charger manufacturers are now doing programs where it essentially pays for the charger and pays for some of your electricity costs. So I'm wondering if it's a similar kind of thing.
The
Okay.
difficulty thing for aviation, especially electric aviation, is that if you want to the government help you with something, it's always too small, because we're the only one in the
Right.
Netherlands flying this aircraft on a little bit of scale. But still, it's peanuts, so they have to
Yeah.
spend so much time
Yeah.
making the regulations just for this one company,
Right, right.
So on one hand, it would be nice, because then maybe others also start using it. But now they would just make it for us, and then they say, okay, well, we'll wait
Yeah,
a bit.
yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. So no, I mean, and I think that's one of the things that I've thought about with you guys too, is like, why aren't there more of these? There's another school out of Fresno in California, that I think they're mostly Pipistrel Alphas. I think they got started before the Velis, and so they actually had to get like an FAA, there's a word for this where it's like, okay, you can fly those, but it doesn't mean everyone else can. But there are, and of course, Beta Technologies, the eVTOL manufacturer, they fly a lot of Velis out of their Burlington, Vermont facility. They have a program where all of their employees can learn to fly. And of course, they
That's
want to
nice.
do that with all electric aircraft. And so they're not nearly as big as you guys, but they're also big. And there appear to be a few in France too. There's like three different centers that are doing a fair amount, and maybe Norwich in UK as well. But yeah, I mean, are you starting to see others, like people who are kind of following your lead, or do you think it's going to like take off? Like, I mean, I see your point about how an existing flight school has a real challenge. They've already paid to train maintenance people, and like everything, all of their workflows are going to be set up around this. Their cost structures are going to be set up around this.
Yeah,
It's
definitely.
not an easy switch, but building a new one, like it seems like you wouldn't do it the other way if you were going to open a new flight school right now. But I can't see what I can't see. Like, what's your experience been like? Do you think this is going to grow?
Yeah, it's definitely gonna grow, but it's all dependent on the technology. I think if we would get like a 20, 30 minute more battery or flight time, that would make a big difference for a lot of schools, because then they think it's more comparable to their current flight lessons. Everybody thinks our flights are too short, but we don't experience that, and we also don't get any complaints from our students, and they pass their exams really well. So it's just really good flight training with the current setup. It also should be a little bit more price competitive, because, well, we have to buy new aircraft. The insurance is quite high. The maintenance is not any less than another aircraft, and we have to swap the batteries every now and then. So it's still not. I don't think it's really. If you have a Cessna like 40 years old, that's way cheaper, even though you pay a lot of gas, of course, for gas, but still that's a cheaper option. So if that changes, which will change, if this aircraft will maybe secondhand, or a new battery comes in, or the insurance company starts thinking, okay, these are actually quite safe planes, let's halve the price there. So then it starts getting interesting. And then I think the first schools who will switch are the big airlines who have their own schools.
Yeah,
Because
great.
they also have the obligation to their mother companies. They have to be more sustainable. They have to do these programs, and they have money to invest in that. So they will probably swap out their fleet for their basic training with electric aircraft. And then I think later other commercial flight schools will start looking at it if it's economically beneficial for them.
I think it's interesting how you mentioned the impact of the used market, right? Like I think we can kind of see that now. Finally, there's starting to be like a reasonable used electric vehicle market, at least where I live, you know. And in the States, like it's even cheaper, getting used EVs now. And to your point, like you occasionally see like a used ALS come up on different aircraft trading sites, but
Yeah, we see quite a few at the moment, because when they first came out, a lot of flight schools also got money from governments to try it out, and that those were 3-year programs, and they kind of stopped. And then the thing is just in the hangar doing nothing, and then they said, okay, maybe somebody else can use it. So there are quite a few for sale at the moment, and we're looking at them as well, because it's well, they flew like 100, 200 hours, so it's still very good. We are looking at it.
So an expansion plan potentially to your point there. I
Yeah,
wonder,
and you just put in a new battery, and you can fly again for a few hundred hours.
I flew a Valis, well, I took a training hour in a Valis Electro in Aachen, Germany. Westflug something, I don't remember the name of the flight, the flying school, but I wonder if it's a similar kind of thing. I don't think they have it anymore, I've noticed. So yeah, I'm wondering if it's this sort of subsidy-oriented 3-year program.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think to get back to the Alpha, I also like that aircraft a lot because it has more endurance, but it's not an EASA certified aircraft, so you cannot use it here. But I think it's FAA certified, so you can do lessons with that.
Like I don't remember if it fully got certified or this one company just got an exception. They had to work on that exception for like 5 years, but they did eventually get one. But yeah, it just took them a terribly long amount of time. But yeah, Beta is using the Valis. I think the Valis is certified with FAA finally. I think that took a while too. But Alpha wasn't designed to be certified, as I understand it. So yeah, makes sense. Okay. So any surprises along the path?
Yeah, well, I think it has what I always say is that we found it really difficult to position ourselves in the market, because we are unique. We are the only one. I think we are the first in the world to actually start a new flight school with two aircraft fully electric. So we called ourselves the eFlight Academy, and we were just telling everybody we were the new generation flight school, and we fly electric. And of course, it got picked up by the media, and we were on TV, and everybody wanted to have us on their shows, and it was really a success. But then we noticed that everybody who wants to do flight training, the first question was, yeah, but what do I need with an electric license? I cannot get
Right.
anywhere. I'm not gonna do a lesson with you because I want to fly an aircraft and not specifically this electric thing.
Right.
And we always had to explain, okay, the aircraft is electric, but the license is just a PPL
Right.
because there is no specific EASA license for electric aircraft. So that was a bit of a problem in the beginning because we had to explain so much. And now we changed a little bit our marketing strategy. So we are a very modern flight school. You can get a lot of different licenses in our place. And yeah, we also fly electric, but that's just a bonus, you know?
Right,
So
right.
for me, it was a bit difficult because I really liked that we were so special and
Yeah.
that we were fo totally focused on this zero emission aviation. But that just didn't work in the marketing because people didn't understand that we were just a regular flight school. So we had to change that a little bit. And I think we didn't grow in the beginning as fast as we are doing right now,
Yeah.
because now people start to understand, and we get more attraction on all type of people who come for us for the quality. And we also have a lot of people who don't care about the electric flight, but they just want a really good flight school with modern tools and good instructors and a really nice hangar and good coffee and just good customer experience. That's what they think is important. And then they fly electric, which is also really comfortable because it's really quiet and no vibrations. And it's just a really nice plane to fly. So that's what they get as a bonus then. So that's something we had to change.
It's funny. I think about choosing co-working facilities, and at one point, like it's like, yeah, the WeWork does have really good coffee. I can see that almost being a selling point. That just shaped a decision at
It
least
can be in the
once.
little things indeed, yeah. And
Yeah.
that's interesting because of my background, because I
Yeah.
was a designer for so long. I really like to think about customer journey. So from
Yeah.
the beginning, the person finds our logo, sees it somewhere, visits our websites until he has finished his course and goes talking to others. Everything in between, I like to design and think about and see where I can get a better experience.
Yeah.
And that's not something that a lot of flight schools do.
No,
So, yeah.
right. They're sort of
No.
aviation fanatics who have been like, I want to work in this. So, yeah, they sort of,
Yeah.
yep.
Yeah. Or they've been a
Interesting.
pilot all their lives and then they start a flight school and
Yeah.
they never thought about also IT, you know, that's
Yeah.
also what I see from other flight schools. I think, whoa, we are so set up so differently than others, because that was also a big advantage because we didn't have anything to start with, so we don't have any legacy software. You know, we have
Right.
everything built from scratch and
Right.
new, and all quite good user experience wise. So that also makes us stand out, and maybe that's better even to tell people than that we are just an electric flight school.
Okay, so we talked about what surprised you. We talked about the solar. What advice would you give folks thinking about getting into pilot training with electric aircraft? And I may be asking for a friend. Like, honestly, I've thought about it. Like, so yeah, I mean, what advice would you give anybody who is thinking about starting something like this?
Starting like doing the course
Or
for
no,
being a
like
pilot or
building a
starting a
business around
business.
electric aviation, of any kind, whether it, I know that in Australia there's a company that's like literally doing like air taxis with Pipistrel. They're obviously short runs, back and forth across a little bit of water where it's so, but yeah, I mean, like starting any kind of business around electrified aviation, what advice would you give? Yeah.
What I like about that example you give right now as well is that you actually already have revenue, and you can prove your business before you. Well, we sold our first flight lesson before we started flying, you know, because that's the business. We actually operate an electric aircraft, and I think we're also the first company in the world that actually makes money with electric aviation, because everybody else is investing, of course, for the future,
Yeah.
and it will look a lot different. But that's what I liked about our business. We could prove that the way our company is set up and the product we offer is viable and is working. So that's what I really like about our. It's really tangible, and you can just try it out, and it works. You can pay for it, and that's business.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of other companies coming up with a lot of new ideas about new model aircraft and things like that, and that is not really my cup of tea. It's maybe too technically complicated for me, and also I wouldn't take the risk there. But that's of course somebody else should do that definitely. I think in that space, I think the certification is really well, it's hell. It's so difficult, and especially with all the things going on in the world, with military drones, with Boeings having issues, whatever. These there are just not enough people in EASA or FAA. I think it's the same thing to look at this new type of technology and to find ways to certify, to create new laws in the amount of time that we actually want to have it. Because we can fly electric for a long time, but we are not allowed to because well, it's not certified. So our battery in the Velis is indeed like a Nissan Leaf battery, which is in automotive, it's 15 years old. If I would put the new Mercedes battery they just announced in my plane, I could maybe go for 3 4 hours, but it will take a few years before I have it. It will come, of course. So that's really interesting as well. For if you want to start a business, look at what's going to happen in the future and build your company towards that goal. That's also what you see in aircraft manufacturers. They design an aircraft for a battery that doesn't exist. That only exists
Knowing
in
full
6 years
well that it
years
will.
when they start. So there are two concurrent paths to that technology, and then hopefully it comes at a certain point together, and then you can have your full product.
I like that. Yeah,
So
you're
there are
the
different things, but I think it's really difficult to give advice to other entrepreneurs. I'm happy and I'm lucky that I rolled into this business. I found a co-founder who was really great in instructing and knows everything about flying, and I knew a lot about IT, customer experience, and running a business, and together we were just a great match. And this flight school came out. Sometimes it just goes as it goes,
It's interesting. You talked about building a business around a technology that'll be available later, and I think about Moore's Law, and how and people in software have building we can build software that's a little bit slow on today's computers because computers 2 years from now will be so much faster,
Definitely,
so it's fine,
same thing.
and batteries have a similar trajectory in terms of cost and in terms of like energy per volume. Energy per weight is a little bit harder, obviously, but we're getting there. CATL is announced what, like 500, 600 watt hour per kilogram, stuff that they're targeting. And maybe the
That's
solid
exactly
states.
what I mean. It's four times as much density as we have currently. We
Exactly.
have around 130. That's a
Oh
huge
my
difference.
gosh. I didn't realize there was only one. Wow. Okay. So there's a lot. So there's some not that difficult changes to make then that could really
No,
add
it's
a
really
lot of
not that
endurance.
difficult.
It's just a
But
matter of
also
recertifying.
for the Velis specifically, like also on your data, I really liked that, and I was quite surprised that we do 1/3 of all the Pipistrel flights in the last year, and we have 5 aircraft. So as a manufacturer, you're thinking about, I'm going to design a new battery, and I'm going to sell it to those guys in Teuge because they're So I might sell 5,
Oh,
that's
fair
actually
point.
what's happening.
Yeah, it's a fair point. So our data, I know that there's at least one flight school in Sweden that barely at all shows up in our numbers, and they
Green Flight Academy. I know
Okay,
them.
there you're aware of them, and I'm not sure exactly what sort of numbers they would be adding. But there's there it, it's all SkyZero is completely based on ADS-B or ADS-B data, which is not universal. It's not everywhere. So I mean, there are certain areas. There may be others, but yeah, it's pretty close though. So yeah, you're definitely way ahead of the pack, and I don't suspect there's another Toha out there. To your point, I think you're the leaders, I would guess.
I'm quite sure. And
Yep.
it's nice to be there because we can, of course, have our records and everything. And we can. And Teuge is really in the Netherlands. There's a lot of people who don't even know the name Teuge. It's not like a big city. It's just a really small village. So then it was really nice when I have your chart also now in the presentation, and people are saying, "Okay, what's that big green bar?"
Yeah, that's you.
And then there's all these airports and all Americans, and then there's little village Teuge with the most electric flights. And
It's an
that's what is really really interesting. It was before as well that we have a lot of airfields approaching us. Because I think you said, what would you advise another business or a flight school to do? But I don't think maybe flight schools will move, but the airfields, they really want to move, because they, and especially in the Netherlands and Europe, they have a lot of issues with the residents, with emissions, but mainly noise. Because of course that's a big issue in the Netherlands, because it's a small country with a lot of flight movements, and they all want an electric flight school on their field. And so we get a lot of requests to start a business on another airfield. And sometimes it's really interesting, and sometimes it's not so interesting, but that's probably what we're going to do next. We're going to see what airfields are interesting for us to just start a new flight school, competing with the existing flight schools, of course. But we get so many enthusiastic airfield authorities and also some financial incentives and things like that, that we could actually start doing, creating our hub network. Yeah.
I don't know a ton about airport economics, but I assume they're getting paid by, I don't know, landings or movements or something, they're obviously not going to be selling petrol to an electric aircraft. So I guess the Venn diagram is airports that are looking for more revenue, but also are operating in their jurisdictions where noise regulations or just angry neighbors would prevent them from starting, you know, from having a gas burning school there. Do I have that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that's correct. And I think most regulations about how many flight movements you can do are based on noise, and sound levels.
Right.
So
right,
if they
right,
have
right.
Aircraft that make less sound, they can do more movements. So that's their incentive. And indeed, they make money based on the landing fees, and they sell gas, MoGas, AppGas, one. But they won't be charging aircraft, I think, because we're doing that in our own hangar. And I think every flight school would do that.
Well, right. Well, and especially the way Bepistol set it up, like you kind of end up buying a charger with the aircraft, and because, you know, the endurance is such that you're not going to be flying it to a lot of nearby airports, and the ones that you are going to be so nearby that you could just buy another charger, like you say, and just drive it out there. It's an interesting space right now. Yeah, in terms of, honestly, that's why I started Sky Zero, is I was thinking like, oh, I want to start a charging network for electrified aviation. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I should find out where they are actually flying, right? And this is how I found out about you guys. And just kind of thinking about like, okay, well, it's all these little Pipistrel flight schools, and they probably have their own chargers, so then it's not a market. It is interesting when I talk to people about electrified aviation, I often describe it as like there's these two buckets which almost don't overlap at all, right? You've got companies like yours, you've got, you know, pilot training, where people are, you know, sort of doing real work with these things. And I don't know why I'm putting that in air quotes. It's real work. These aircraft are not that different from a conventional aircraft, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, it's just powered by electricity, just that one chapter difference in the manual. That's it. That's quietly doing all of this work over here, while this very noisy sector, you know, with JOBY and ACHR and now BETA, all these stock tickers, all these different EVTOL companies, which are now publicly traded and like getting all this press about their air taxis, and very little real work is like being accomplished. You know, Beta has a couple of aircraft, one in Norway and one in New Zealand, with customers. Bristow in Norway is looking at figuring out like how to actually use it for cargo operations. And New Zealand Airlines is doing a similar thing in New Zealand. Like, could we actually use this thing? So you can see a path to real work getting done with those. But like, there's almost so little in common between you, you know. But it's all both electrified aviation in the end.
But we meet each other and we learn from each other, and I would really like to train beta pilots, you know. That's going to be probably a type rated aircraft, so it'd be really nice to work together on those things, and I think we will also try to get those aircraft to our airfields once they are operational, and we have some Dutch people using it or abroad or whatever.
Why not?
So it will merge one day, because it's all the same regulation. That's what you have in common. So,
And Beta aircraft charge with CCS. So I think NRG to fly already has a CCS charger on Toha, on the airfield somewhere. So
We also have four CCS chargers ourselves. And then the Pipistrel is connected with that via an adapter, which is also a special cable. Also had to be certified by EASA.
Yeah.
So it's not the nicest solution, but at least we can use our own chargers.
I see. So you're not just limited to the little sort of suitcase on wheels things that you normally see.
No. Ah. We can plug them into our 40 kilowatt hour chargers. 40 kilowatt. Capacity.
Interesting. Have you guys been doing that the whole time, or is that more recent?
No, we had the charge for a while, but we had to wait for the cable for a long time. But we have it. It works now. Yeah.
So there's no relationship, correlative, and certainly not causative between that and the battery issues then, because okay, got it. Yeah, their manual gets so specific about you have to use our chargers, right? Or you're avoiding your warranty. So what I think it was Merlin at NRG to Fly who told me about those in the first place. And I'm like, no, that's not possible. And he's like, yes, yeah. And so he's the one that educated me on this. But interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's always the first mover. That was also with automotive. The first mover thinks he can invent the charging standard and then also the charging network.
Yeah.
And then in the end, that doesn't work because, you have to be open and generic and everybody should use the charger. Otherwise, the whole system won't work.
Yeah.
So we're hopefully getting to the CSS everything and hopefully we'll get a lot of charges on different airfields. Yeah.
Cool. Great. Cool. Okay. Okay. So we're coming up on time. I kind of just want to keep talking to you all day, but you probably got other things to do and we are coming up on time. So.
Yeah. And I wanted to another thing that was interesting. You said that you started thinking about also charging network and then gathering data. That was actually my first idea before I started eFlight. I was doing a lot of research to all the companies that were out there, and I thought it was super difficult to find information.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of news sites. There's a Wikipedia page. There are several newsletters. Of course, all the manufacturers have their own blog posts and social media posts and whatever, but it just takes months to get a grasp of this market and what's going on. And I was putting everything I got in a database, in an Airtable database, so I could actually nicely look at it and make interfaces out of it. And I was just putting in all the data, though this aircraft, this is the commercial date that is being launched, this is the battery that's in there, the battery is made by this company.
Yeah.
This company also makes battery for these aircraft is a two-seater, this has a 500 kilometer range. So all this data was in my, I was quite far, I had like 80 aircraft in it.
Wow.
Out of the 300, I think, are in there. And then I met my partner and I actually stopped working on it and it never came live.
Mm.
But I was actually making the IMDb of electric aviation.
Wow.
And
So of those 80, though, I mean, how many are operational in the end? Or are a lot of those experimental?
Two or three, not so much. And I think half of it is maybe stopped. It's something you have to keep track of all the time, of course.
Yeah.
But that's the whole idea, that you have one single source that has the latest information and you don't have to go looking for it.
Well, maybe we'll have to do a collaboration. Could be fun.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Yeah, because I really believe that, and also what you're doing, that the sector really benefits from good information, and they see where are things going on, what's happening, what are the numbers, and also for policymakers, for investors, for journalists, they all need to know these things.
Yeah,
and currently it's so new that it's so fragmented.
Yeah,
so it's really, really great to have some more.
It is growing though, right? Yeah. I think that the number of flights daily grows on average. I think there's some seasonality in there, and so I expect next summer to be really, really good. It seems to be that there's some seasonality around summertime.
I expect next summer to be good from Toga at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're
good.
Gonna be really busy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And I am seeing, like I say, the Fresno one, and there's another one, Pitt Meadows, and in British Columbia. Beta in Burlington, of course. They're in France. France is starting to really take off. They don't have a single Toha where there's like this huge center of activity. But if you sum up all their smaller ones, they're actually, it's bigger than the Netherlands in terms of operations. So Yeah, I must feel a little bit lonely being such a leader. And to your point, you know, thinking like, oh, there, how many, I'm going to sell these to those guys in Toa and that's it. But there appears to be more from what I can see. So, yeah, I think you're going to be in, finding yourself in good company shortly, if not already. So we talked a little bit about what surprises you've had. Any lessons you've learned? And this is almost outside of just e-flight or just aviation, but just in life. Like, do you remember learning something and thinking like, oh, I just assumed that this is true, and learning, nope, that's not true. This world is different than how I thought.
So I come from the software and IT like you. And I started that in 1997, and everything is possible. You know, you just can build something and you publish it and it's done, and nobody ever tells you there's something wrong with it, you know, because there are some regulation, GDPR and things like that, but
sure.
Security and everything, but it wasn't in there in the beginning. And it is there, of course, in aviation. So for me, that was quite a shock, that things wouldn't go as fast as I would like to have them going, that I was used to. So I had to learn to have more patience. And if I had a good idea that I might walk into a wall somewhere, and that I had to handle that correctly, so I could actually have energy again for the next ID. So that I found quite challenging. But I still like that. We still have those IDs, and that we are different than others, and we keep trying those things. I think it's good to keep that going. What I also experience is that there are some conventional people. Well, I understand if you don't like the aircraft, you don't like electric cars, you want to have it make a lot of noise. That's okay. But there we have actually had some people who are really, how do you say, they really try to block us or stop us or really try to work against us, you know. So it's okay if you're not helping us, that's fine, or not mentioning our business. But they did the other way around. They were actually fighting us on social media and telling us that what we were doing was not okay and things like that. And that I also never experienced, because you have so much public media, and also ourselves, we do a lot of social media, so we tell a lot about our business. We have more followers than I think all other flight schools combined in the Netherlands, you know. So yeah, and we're only 4 years old, so I understand there might be some fear of those other people that we grow really big or take clients, but still I didn't really think about that. And the other thing about the media is that what I really like, and that's also interesting, that I never had in my company before, that because you're doing something really new and in a different way, it's really easy to find the press and to be visible. Because our 1,000th landing, we're just going to invite a well-known Dutch person. We put him in aircraft, make a video, and, well, it's on the news again, you know? And then we have two aircraft flying for the first time in formation in the Netherlands, you know, first charging abroad from international flight, the Netherlands, Germany. So all the time we could figure out some way to be in the picture of people.
Yeah.
And that's really, I didn't know that existed. And it helps also that we have a really good marketing partner in the company.
Harder to do that with software. Are you just going to film someone at a computer, right? But
that's true. We have such a great product now compared to what I had.
You're also reminding me. I went into Google Images, which it's funny. A lot of my like database building is Google Images, searching for tele registrations and things like that. Just search for Pipistrel Velis Electro and see what you get back. And one time I did that, and I found a picture of a Pipistrel Velis flying in front of a volcano. And it's labeled like first electric aircraft flying in front of a volcano. And of course, it's in Iceland, right? Like where else would it be?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So even in Iceland, they have these things. Okay, something you're most proud of?
That my dream of, or my goal was to do something in this world of electric aviation. And I'm really proud that after 4 or 5 years of hard work, that we have almost 4,000 hours and the last 1.5 years completely on our own energy. So we don't get anything from the grid. We put a lot of electricity back to the grid every year because we have too much. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Sometimes if I see the images from the air from the hangar on a sunny day, then I think, wow, this is quite amazing that this somehow worked out like this. Because before I started, I didn't know I would have a flight school. So it was not like a long time dream. It was something for me to start learning about electric aviation. And then this came out. So that's quite cool.
Awesome. Any shout outs you'd like to give? Anything that's giving you joy right now?
Yeah, I would like to shout out to all the entrepreneurs building aircraft for the future. I think that's always when I meet somebody who's doing that, I get a lot of respect for taking up that really big goal and big ambition, and trying to fly the world with better aircraft. Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for those guys.
Amazing. Cool. So we'll come in. I call this the lightning round, but I don't know why, because it doesn't usually go all that fast, but it's the same three questions. What is your favorite aircraft?
The Velis. Yeah,
Yeah.
the Pipistrel
Good answer. What is your favorite airport?
Velis. Yeah, I think also Teuge, because I don't know so much airports. So yeah, it's the one I know best,
Well,
and I like
you
it.
said you
Yeah.
traveled a lot earlier, so I wondered if you pull something out from your travels, I wonder.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Airport. Maybe then Santiago de Chile, because I really like to go there in the past when my friends lived there. So yeah.
Sounds amazing. Sounds
Yeah.
amazing. Okay, and that's it for the lightning
Yeah.
round. Thank you so much for being with us today. We really enjoyed this interview. Awesome.
All
Thanks,
right.
Matthias.
Like it too. Thank you.